Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome back to Whiskey Congress. We have a whiskey to review this week. Now, I should throw in that this is our whiskey from last week that got turned into Irish coffee, which is not a fair way to review a whiskey. Last week, Steve brought us a bottle of John Powers Irish whiskey.
Yep.
And if you want to give your thoughts.
It's actually Powers Triple Distilled Gold Label.
Pardon me.
Which is a little bit of a tease because if you look at the bottom, it looks like it should be called Black Label, right?
It does look like it should be called Black Label.
But I think I'm just nitpicking
You're injecting racism where there is none in this case. Mm. Or is there?
No. I don't know. Getting just directly to the whiskey. So it didn't blow me away. And Powers is not really meant to blow anybody away, I don't think. It's more of a everyday shot in a beer type whiskey. But it's not bad. You know, like typically if I'm going to do an Irish whiskey or if I'm going to do a shot, it'll usually be Jameson. If they don't have Jameson, then I'll go to Tullamore Dew and then work my way to Powers. But this was, actually, I think a little bit better than what they, what their standard offering is. You know, just kind of getting to it, I gave it an 88.
I was a little bit more generous. I gave it an 89.
Okay.
I agree with you. It's basically run-of-the-mill Irish whiskey. You know, a little bit of sweetness. I thought it was well balanced. It's smooth. I'm assuming it's 80 proof. I didn't even look.
No, actually, it's 86.4.
86. Proof. Okay, yeah, so it's a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little bit stronger than their normal stuff.
Now, what is it? Because people are seeing this, we need to explain one other thing.
Oh, yes,
okay. We are drinking Mickey's Big Pot.
We are drinking the Mickey's grenades.
That was your joke from last week because
It was St. Patrick's Day. So, I mean, I was in a rush and you know, I was like, green bottle. And I just grabbed the Mickey's and ran out. And then I realized while I was driving here, I was like, oh, that was a mistake. That was a mistake. And so
I'm joining the team effort. We will consume this. It's whatever. It's a malt.
It's not bad.
It's drinkable.
It could be still reserved to 11.
So. I'd rather drink this than like Coors Light.
Okay.
I'm not a Coors Light guy. I mean, and I don't, again, that's not, I'm not trying to shit on Coors Light. It's just, I prefer this has a little bit more body, but it is hardly it is a fine malt liquor according to the bottle. We'll give it that. All right. So 88, 89, we disagree by a point for the first time in a while. We've been pretty much dead on in our scoring in the past four or five whiskeys. We should also note that we do have a backup. Our backup, we're having a little bit of Blanton's.
Yeah, there's a little bit of Blanton's there, so that'll help cleanse the palate.
I don't know if I can. Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's a good whiskey. It's just
it's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. All right. So in the news this week, so much goes on. Fucking A. Should we even bring up the Deadpool again?
You know what? I mean, I think we have to kind of jump out of that just because there's so much
probably will happen during the show.
Right. And somebody else will get fired or booted. You know, I'm still, you know, HR McMasters, was replaced by, HR McMasters.
John Bolton.
Yeah. He was replaced by John Bolton, who was a Breitbart and a Fox News shrill. You know, he's considered a hawk. You know, hold on. Michael James is watching us as well. And yes, Michael, that is Mickey's.
See, that's why we had to do that. We had to talk about that. Am I seeing this right? Yes, Michael, you are.
Yes, you are. And I'm wondering, maybe you can't hear us as well, or maybe there's a delay or something like that. But yeah, it's definitely Mickey's. I'm not sure when he asked, but he might have asked before we explained what it is. So that's definitely Mickey's. So there you go.
This is not an ad. All right.
Aside from the Deadpool, we'd have to reset it anyway. HR McMasters was the one who was let go. I said Jared Kushner. You said it was going to be Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah.
And I think at this point now,
we did have a Deadpool draft.
Right.
Like, I mean, draft three guys. And
seriously, it's an interesting situation, interesting time over there. Trump's lawyer left. We're still not
John Dowd.
Right. We're still not sure what happened there. I doubt we'll ever get an explanation. They'll hide behind
attorney-client privilege.
Yeah,
that's legit, right? I guess.
Right. I guess. Yeah, sure. So we won't know what's going on there. But, you know, today I think a bigger issue is we do have the March for Our Lives. It is a rally, a protest in response to gun violence, primarily, you know, the Parkland massacre that happened on Valentine's Day of this year. Nicholas Cruz goes to his high school and, you know, shoots 17 people or, you know, kills 17 people, hurts another 17 people, and is eventually arrested and taken down. And the survivors and some of the survivors of that shooting put on a rally and put on a march today that has found worldwide support. It's being covered by all the major news outlets. There are celebrities from every walk of life that are supporting, that are performing, that will be speaking. It has picked up a great deal of momentum. It's happening in Washington, D.C., with satellite marches all over the country, all over the world. I read today that there's going to be marches in Israel, in the U.K., Australia, and you know a lot of other nations around the world in support of this and looking for, change in the U.S. Gun laws and the gun culture in this country. And I put an article out on it today on our website on Whiskey Congress, talking about it and basically talking about how I was not comfortable with it. But before I get into that, Jim, what are your thoughts about this march today?
You know, I hate to be cynical, but I don't see it doing anything different. I respect these kids for not allowing it to just drift into the news cycles. I respect them for saying, this happened to us, we have a voice, and we're going to use it. But in the grand scheme, I don't see it making any changes. I hate to be cynical, but I don't see anyone saying, well, these kids are different. I mean, Sandy Hook was the one to me that said, nothing is going to change. Our politicians do not have the appetite for taking on the NRA. And let me be clear. I'm not saying that, you know, there's this one magical law that would fix a problem. The fact is we have more guns in this country than we have people. We have one on the wall right behind us here. I'm a gun guy. I do believe that we should have some logical gun laws put in place. I've been a big pusher for magazine capacity, and I've had you and others criticize me saying that won't do any good. It would do a little bit of good. Maybe not a lot, but it might save a few lives in situations like these.
Well,
and to me, it's worth it.
Well, for me, one of the things I want to see before we add any new laws, let's get a consistent enforcement of the laws that we already have in the books. That's one of the biggest things that I want to push for is I want to see...
Like what, though? What law do you want enforced that is not being?
Well, okay, so there were systems in place that we saw what happened with Nicholas Cruz. This is a perfect example where there were miscommunications, there were misconnections, there were... You know, a number of issues where he ended up falling through the cracks all the way down. You know, whether it was bureaucratic oversight, whether it was the resource officer and the sheriff's department not going in and defending those kids, whether it was, you know, the police had made it, to, you know, had, you know, so many stops at his house and all that. I mean, there were a number of opportunities to prevent this from happening. That would have literally changed the course of history had someone done their job the way that they were supposed to. You know, from the FBI all the way down to that sheriff who didn't run into that school. So I would like to see, you know, some consistency there. I would like to see the sharing of information. If you go to someone's house for domestic violence issues 40-some-odd times, then that should be known to the gun registry, right? I mean,
I agree.
There's you know, there's a balance there. And this is where the NRA and this is, well, you know, what if someone just doesn't like me and they call the police on me, then I lose my gun because of a difference in opinion or someone doesn't like me or what have you. And it's not necessarily perfect, but I'd rather see, all right, let's look at what we have. Let's look at the laws we have. Let's let's enforce them. Let's whatever systems we have in place, let's maximize that. Let's use it. Then let's see what's working, what's not working, and then plan accordingly.
All right. I mean, nothing that you said is something I would argue with other than putting everything on the sheriff who didn't run into the building. I don't know.
No, I'm going to put that on him. I'm absolutely going to put that on him. That's your job.
What did he know? What did he know?
What? I don't care what you knew. Your job as a resource officer, you're there armed.
Yeah.
As a person, as a police officer, right? You're called a resource officer, but you're there armed. Shots fired. Go figure out what happened. Don't sit there on your golf cart and wait. What are you waiting on?
I haven't seen the video. I don't know where he was.
I watched the video.
I have not.
I mean, he at no point in time did he go into the school while the shots are being fired. Go in and figure out. Like kids' lives were in danger. Kids were dying because you didn't go do your job. And if you're a police officer and you're going to tell me that that's not your job, then I don't know. Then you don't know what your job is, because I do. And I refuse to believe and I refuse to accept that that's not your job.
All right.
And I think it's been established that it is his job, because every cop, every military service person that I know has said, you go in. Okay. Right. And then we have an example in Maryland where that's exactly what happened, where we had another shooter, an active shooter in a school. Resource officer goes in, exchanges gunfire with the shooter, takes the shooter out. Two people get hurt. One of the girls just died
today,
unfortunately. But how many lives did that resource officer save?
We don't know.
Because he did his job.
No, that is the good guy with the gun actually did the job this time. So that's been the NRA's argument. I'm still going to say it's not the strongest total argument that the only solution to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. But at least in that case, the good guy with a gun did good. So we need to call it out.
And I'll take that. Listen, and I think that is a solution that we can have. Armed resource,
part of the solution.
Part of the solution that we can have is armed resource officers in the school, which many schools do.
Yeah. They had them in Columbine, by the way.
Well, and again, they have to. But now, one of my arguments with that is that some of these high school campuses are so large that even if you have someone who's willing to run towards gunfire, by the time they get there, it may already be too late. Now, they may be able to stop something from happening, but you still have, I mean, a lot of ground to cover with one or two people to get to an active shooter where they may not know exactly where he's at. You know, and even if they're willing to charge forward and charge ahead, you still may not necessarily get there, and you still may not be able to save as many lives as you could have had you been closer. But those are some of the logistics that make it complicated. You know, I mean,
I agree, and that's one of the that's why my beef with the NRA argument that the only solution to a bad guy with a gun is a good guy. No. Maybe it's part of the solution.
And I don't think the NRA has ever said it's the only
actually,
solution.
That is a direct quote from my buddy Wayne LaPierre. The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun is a 100% accurate quote of my buddy Wayne.
Well, I mean, we all accept that Wayne LaPierre is an idiot.
Okay. Right?
I mean, and so the other spokespeople for the NRA, whether it's Colleen Knorr, even Lesh.
My girl, Dana Loesch.
Dana Loesch.
Whatever.
You know, she hasn't even gone to say that much, that far. But the reality is that it's a complex issue. It's multifaceted. I mean, even Mike Wood's solution of, you know, keeping the manufacturers from, you know, selling the guns to civilians and reducing their ability to produce and then doing a big gun buyback. Like, yes, that will definitely have a major impact. But the reality of the situation is, this country, we still have more guns than we have people.
Right.
Right. Like, that's just a statistic that we can't get around. And there are some people who, on the initial buyback, aren't going to want to give their guns up. The value of that gun will still exceed whatever the government is going to pay for it.
I wouldn't.
And
if it was a voluntary buyback, I wouldn't sell anything.
Right. Now, you do a voluntary buyback, and then you make it criminal to have certain types of weapons. And then you say you're going to go in and take the weapons, maybe. No, but man, that sounds and doesn't feel great. And I don't trust our government. You know, I don't trust our government. I don't trust what happens
in terms of competence or in terms of if we
any
had
of it. Really? I don't trust them in terms of competence. I don't trust them in terms of, all right, now we've got the weapons, so now what do we do? Right, I'm not saying that they're going to come in and take over and it's going to turn into some, you know, military state or.
Here's my thing with that. people say that all the time in the gun community, right? Like, if, you know, people with guns are citizens, people without guns are subjects, all that shit. Gun ownership in places like Australia, Germany, England, whatever, is really, really low. And I would argue they have, if not substantially more freedom than us, certainly several more freedoms than us. Now, not they also lack some things. I mean, some of those countries don't have a legal right to freedom of speech. Canada does not have a legal right to freedom of speech, which is fucking crazy, but it's actually true. But I will never forget walking down a street in Germany with a cracked open beer, drinking a beer, walking down the street and saying, this feels amazing. Because if I did this in Cleveland, Ohio, I could get arrested.
At that point, you hadn't been to Vegas or New Orleans yet. So
that is true. Oh, no, I've been to New Orleans, but a long time ago.
Right.
But so, I've been to Vegas. Yes, I felt very free in Vegas, too, as you witnessed.
As I'm well aware. So free that we lost you.
So but you, listen, you lost me to near kidney failure, not to brothels. I want that on the record.
Whatever. One of my, you know, listen, I was listening to over the course of this week, there have been a number of different shows and whether online or satellite or TV shows that have had people from Australia on talking about what they did in 1996 and 97, banning semi-automatic weapons and weapon ownership and things like that, and talking about the statistics. And looking at the statistics, like, depending on how you look at them, you can make these statistics say somewhat what you want them to say. I think
that's almost always true, right?
I mean, I think the statistics lean towards showing that what they did in 96 and 97 and banning, you know, certain types of weapons and access to weapons has, you know, reduced suicides. It's reduced homicides. You know, they don't see the mass shootings, obviously, the way we see them in the United States. You know, we can even talk about how we see them in the United States, because I talk about that in the article, that we've, you know, really based off of, you know, where two or more people die in a school setting, that we've had 22 school shootings in the last 20 years, as opposed to the statistics that's thrown out, that there's been, you know, hundreds over that same period of time. And so mostly what you've seen in Australia is generally what you say are good things. Now, there are citizens, people who live there, people from there, that people, you know, that I know or that I have, you know, some form of relationship with, who say, listen, gun violence is still a problem in Australia. It's not nearly what it is in the United States, but Australia also has a fraction of the population that we have as well. But they have, where we have three guns for every one person, you know, they have, you know, one person
half a gun to whatever.
Yeah, yeah, it's a, you know, a fraction of a gun per people, or I think they have one gun for every, you know, five people or something along those lines, and I forget what the stat is, but they, I think it's like they have seven times as many people as they have guns. So there's some differences there. You can still make some connections. You can still see that there were some positive things. The suicide number coming down alone is good. The accidental death to children, that number coming down is good. They estimate that they save roughly 200 lives a year between suicide and accidental death, especially among children. And that on its face is something that would make it worth it here, given the number of people. I mean, because the highest percentage of gun deaths, even in the United States, is suicide.
Right. I mean, guns make it easy.
Whether you're trying to shoot yourself or shoot someone else, they make killing easier, right? Like, I get it. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. But it just, they make it so much easier to do. And if you have to work at it, people who have to work at killing another person, you know, don't always end up killing them. But if you don't have to work at it and it's easy, you can easily kill yourself, or you can easily kill another person with a gun.
You know what else guns do? Set off panic alarms. I get home, so I lock my gun up when I leave town. I take it out of lockup when I get home. I've been traveling for work. I took my pistol out of, I got home late Thursday night, took my pistol out of its locked case, threw it in the drawer next to my bed where the panic button for my alarm system happens to reside, and I wasn't thinking about that, and I landed it on top of the panic button, setting off the alarm.
Okay, so new rule. How about we just stop throwing pistols around?
There's that. I just dropped it into the drawer. I just happened to drop it into the drawer on top of the...
So, again, why don't we just... Why don't we
I thought that story would amuse you. Because all of a sudden, there's alarms going off. I'm getting a call like, sir, what's your password? I'm like, I don't remember my password. Hold on, let me guess. And I guessed, fortunately, right.
I dropped my gun. Oh, he said there's a gun. And now you have a SWAT team
I thought you found that funny. I thought it was...
It is funny, okay, but I'm just... my suggestion...
Watch where you put your pistol down in the drawer next to your bedside. Yes.
Let's be a little less aggressive with the pistol throwdown.
I was tired. I probably didn't need to get the gun out at that particular moment, but that did happen to me the other night. All right, so we're talking about Australia, and now we're going to talk about the Australian woman that was killed in Minnesota. The officer that charged with her death is now being charged with murder and manslaughter. We've seen this movie before, right? This is going to be one of the weirder cases because he is, I want to say, Somali.
Yes, he's a Somali immigrant.
So he's a Somali immigrant who shot a very attractive Australian white woman. And I only bring these things up because they're going to come up in the media. I know it shouldn't matter from our legal standpoint, but a jury will see this, and it will kind of put a referendum on the racial implications of that. And my prediction is that, like all of the other officers involved in accidental, careless shootings, this guy will walk as well. I don't want to come off as anti-cop. I don't think this guy's a murderer, to be honest with you. I think he's an incompetent police officer who, in the course of performing his duties in a really poor, badly trained fashion, led to the death of someone that should not have died. In this case, it is ridiculous. I mean, if you felt threatened by this person, I don't know how you got the badge in the first place, so I'm blaming the system, not the guy. Not saying that the guy shouldn't be held criminally responsible in some way. I just can't see it being called murder.
Well, the way they charged him with murder and they charged him with manslaughter. And what that tells me is that they're looking for a conviction, right? They're saying, ideally we want to convict him of murder, but you have the option of manslaughter. And if we can't prove the case against murder in that process, we should be able to prove the case of manslaughter.
And if manslaughter means negligently causing a death, I don't know how you're not guilty of that in this case. Right? I mean, he fired a shot at an unarmed person. Yes, he was responding to a crime scene, but to say that this guy was not, you know, legally responsible for this woman's death is, in my opinion, crazy. But we've seen plenty of cases where officers were involved in deaths that, I mean, the shooting in Arizona, which now we got a white cop and a white guy, throw in multiple,
going back to this one, if you don't remember what happened, the woman had called in to 911 and said that it sounded like a woman was in danger, and she might have been being hurt. Maybe she was just having sex of some sort. And Justine Damon, the victim, ends up going down into the alley to kind of do her own investigation. Now, I will tell you, Australian white girl, stay your ass in your apartment. Like, what are you doing your own investigation?
You're blaming the victim to a degree.
I'm not blaming. Okay, stop. But I mean, come on. Like, let's. For safety, I mean, at night, like, would you,
no,
if you I had mean, a girl over and she
I would
says, t-
I would tell
hey,
her,
I
would
I
tell her, get your ass back here. You're absolutely
okay,
right.
Okay, all right, mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. I mean, like, yes. let's not go into the social, I mean, like, just the common sense thing that you would do. If you want to call it misogynistic or whatever, okay, fine, but I like to keep the people around me safe.
Yeah.
So that being said, she goes into the alley. She, you know, she's snooping around, trying to figure out what's going on. The police pull in. The cop says he heard a loud noise. He's in the passenger seat. He shoots his gun towards the noise,
across the
officer's face, and then it ends up going through the window and striking her, and you know she ends up dying. Which there's so much wrong with that. I mean, like, you could have killed your partner, you know. I mean, like, you don't aim that gun the right way. You could have killed him. I mean, you probably both are now partially deaf, aside from the fact that, oh, by the way, you killed someone. So, I mean, like...
Shooting at the first thing you saw after hearing a loud noise.
Not even... I mean, just right? Shoot, right? Like, I mean, you just shot in the direction of a loud noise, which to me is utterly insane. And I have to believe that the training for these police officers is better than that, but that's not how, that's not what the evidence is showing. The evidence is showing that this guy was poorly trained or he intentionally killed her.
Right.
Right. I mean, and we don't know. That's only speculation. But based off the evidence that we have, or what we know or what's been told to us, you know, either he was really jumpy or he saw her and took her out for unknown reasons. Right. And so, I mean, I don't know what that is. I don't want to start a conspiracy, but I'm just saying, like, it just doesn't make sense that you're a trained police officer and you hear a noise and you're so rattled that you pull your gun out and you shoot across your partner's face through a window and end up killing a woman. That's insane.
Yeah, I agree. It's insane.
But listen, I still
predict he'll end up walking.
He won't walk. He'll go to jail.
We'll see.
He'll absolutely go to jail. I mean, the prosecution is going to, they're going to pull out all the stops. I would be surprised if they got him for murder, but they'll get him for manslaughter. And I think the case is relatively easy to prove. And I think that you can give the jury instructions that give them plenty of leeway to allow them to do that. And based off the evidence that they have, and I don't know what it is, but I can imagine what it is. I think the prosecution will be able to make that argument and sleep fine at night when they get a manslaughter conviction.
I think manslaughter is the right conviction. I don't think this is a murderer. I think it's a
poorly trained cop who resulted in,
yeah.
Which is fine. And oh, by the way, when you have these sort of cases with this kind of, like, you know, just blatant disregard for training and essentially blatant disregard for the law, this is what should happen. Now,
yeah.
I could argue that it should have happened faster. And from reports that we have, there was a lack of cooperation from the other officers, you know, in the police force, which that is a whole other problem. Right. Like, why are these officers not, like, you have a, like, listen, he may be a good guy, but his bad actions are giving your entire police force a bad rap. You don't necessarily have to throw him under the bus, but you need to be honest about what happened, because this is the reason why you have NFL players protesting. Right. Not necessarily for Justine Damon, but yes, for Justine Damon, because this is the type of action, like, this happened to be an attractive white woman from Australia, but This happens too many times. Disproportionately, it happens to young black men, right? We just had a case of it in Sacramento.
This is a bad one.
Right. I mean, Stephon Clark was in his grandmother's backyard. She said people always bang on the back door because the doorbell doesn't work, and the police were chasing someone who was breaking into cars, allegedly, and they run into his backyard because there was a helicopter above and said, hey, he's in this backyard. So they run back there. And apparently he was walking towards them with a cell phone,
yeah.
And they unload 20 rounds in him, you know, and they end up killing him. And there's camera footage. Did you watch their body cams?
I heard the audio of it. I was driving. I did not see the video. So fill me in.
So, I mean, the video doesn't, I mean, it shows the officers running, you know, flashlights.
Bouncing.
And it's dark and they get around the corner. Or they get to the corner of the house where, you know, of the backyard where he's at. You know, they scream some commands. They never announce themselves as police. You can't even really hear if he said anything or what he was saying. All you hear is them scream gun, gun, and then unload on him.
How many officers fired? Two or three?
Two officers.
Two.
Two officers.
So they fired on an average of 10 rounds apiece.
Right, which would have probably would have emptied their clips, depending on what they have. I don't know what their service.
Okay. I don't know what they have in California, but right. I do know that high cap magazine for a Glock is going to be 15 rounds probably.
Right. I mean, and again, I don't know what they were carrying, but I don't know how many rounds each officer shot.
Right.
But we know 20 rounds were fired, and then they didn't give him help. They're sitting there yelling, "Hey, sir, are you okay? Are you able to respond? You know, we're not going to come over there until we're sure that you're not going to shoot back at us." You know, and they go through this whole thing, which is that procedure? Probably. But, I mean, you just fire 20 rounds in his direction. So, you know, what are you doing?
I'm trying to set this up, and it keeps playing automatically. Keep going.
Stop touching it.
Keep going.
Listen, I got a 3-year-old. I got to deal with this shit all the time.
Anyway.
So the kid is, you know, he's been shot however many number of times. And he's laying there. They're yelling at him. And you can't really hear if he's making some sort of noise, and, you know, if he was shot at 20 times, it's not clear how many times he was hit, and if he was making noise, whatever it was, there's some assumption that you could make that he's probably not in a condition to be able to shoot you. Now, the police are going to say, well, standard procedure, you know, you can't take that risk and we got to make it home safe. And you know, if he doesn't, then that's on him. Which to me, that's part of the problem, right? That mentality of I have to get home safe at all cost, right? That to me sounds like it's us versus the rest of the world, no matter what. So if you do anything that even gives me the hint that I might be in danger, I can therefore shoot and end your life. In order,
and if,
so,
and if I'm wrong,
in order, so I can go home. And if I'm wrong, it is what it is. There's really no repercussion unless I walk up to you and shoot you in the head for no reason. Right. But as long as I say gun and afterwards I say, I feared for my life.
Yeah.
Then they're right. And so that, because of that dynamic, you have this, right? Where they can easily say, we were justified. It was dark. We feared for our life. Yeah. It was a cell phone, but it could have been a gun. And since it could have been a gun, we were right in shooting. You know, I mean, it's dark and it could have been any number of things. And so maybe before pulling the trigger, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough call and we've had this conversation multiple times before. But this one definitely doesn't feel right. You know, it's dark, you're running, you have a helicopter up above, you know, someone could have, I mean, you know, you got one guy who's trying to run away from the police who may have been breaking into cars, zigzagging through a neighborhood. You got another guy who's trying to get into his house. That guy gets confused for the guy who's breaking into cars. I mean, or maybe he was breaking into cars, but breaking into a car shouldn't be a death sentence.
Agreed.
You know, and our buddy Mike Wood will tell you that pretty much anything can be a death sentence based on, you know, but think about what if you think about what he's saying and you look at this, it's all right, the guy was breaking into a car and as soon as he ran from them, they were put on alert that he's not complying. And since he's not complying, then
Mike Wood would also say tell you that police training is woefully inadequate and they should be able to handle situations like that. I think you're
agreed.
Okay.
Agreed. I mean, agreed. But I mean,
we need to get Mike on the show again.
Yeah, I mean, we could do that in the next couple of weeks, but I think, again, we have another situation where the whole body cam push, right? We push for body cams, and what has that gotten us, right? It's gotten us more information, but I mean, it still leaves you with, well, you know, again, he didn't comply. I feared for my life, and I need to go home at night, and if it cost someone their life because they didn't stop for X, Y, or Z, no matter what the crime, then so be it. And I mean, that seems to be acceptable in our criminal justice system.
It does seem to be acceptable in our criminal justice system, and that is fucked up. I mean, to me,
you know, it won't work for the Somali cop in Minnesota. I guarantee.
Was there a body camera involved in that?
No, there wasn't a body cam. There was no body cam, and I don't think. If we do have audio, it may not be great or something like that. We haven't heard it. It's not going to work. The argument of, you know, I feared for my life. I needed to go home at night. That whole thing. It's not going to work for the Somali immigrant cop in Minnesota.
The ultimate example of that is that asshole in Arizona that they had multiple people covering a guy. He's on the ground. He's on all fours. He reaches back to pull his shorts up and gets mowed down.
You know, after receiving multiple ridiculous instructions that, you know, I mean, and the fact that cop gets to walk away is insane to me. Oh my God, James!
You want me to play this and it won't fucking. All right,
I didn't.
All right.
How about this? Why don't you play the clip?
Okay.
So the clip that we're about to play is from the owner of the Sacramento Kings. Right. So two nights ago, or maybe it was last night, the Sacramento Kings had to close the arena that they play in. I think it's the NovaCare Arena. They had to close the arena that they planned because the people of Sacramento were protesting because of this shooting that we were just talking about of Stephon Clark. And so when they closed it, the owner of the Sacramento Kings came on the PA system and he addressed the crowd. And I just wanted to play this because it's a little bit different than what we've heard from, you know, especially our owners in the NFL. On how they're kind of looking at and approaching the social justice issue. Jim, please play the clip.
I can't play it.
You have got to be shitting
I'm
me.
I'm kidding you. Oh yes, my God. Yes, I'm kidding you.
No, you're not kidding me because...
Come on, make a statement.
Good evening, all. Thank you for your patience tonight. On Sunday, we had a horrific, horrific tragedy.
So our Facebook Live crowd, we're actually listening to a clip right now. Which I just realized you can't hear. Players, so I do apologize.
The executives, ownership, and the entire Kings family, I first of all wanted to express our deepest sympathies to the family. What happened was absolutely horrific, and we are so very sorry. We're so very sorry for your loss. I also wanted to say that we at the Kings recognize your people's ability to protest peacefully, and we respect that. We here at the Kings recognize that we have a big platform. It's a privilege, but it's also a responsibility. It's a responsibility that we take very seriously.
Okay, go ahead, cut it.
And we stand here before...
So that was the owner of the Sacramento Kings, and we apologize to the people watching on Facebook Live that you can't hear that. We're running it through the soundboard so that you could hear it on the podcast and the other platforms that we play it. So we do apologize to the downside of doing the Facebook Live thing. We're working it out from a technical standpoint. But thank you for staying with us. So essentially what he said was that as an NBA organization, that they have a responsibility to address some of the social justice issues that they are approached with, and that they recognize and respect the crowd's right to assemble and assemble peacefully to protest. They apologized and gave their condolences to the family, and they offered their support to the Sacramento area in any way that they can. They want to help, and they want to help prevent something like that, what happened to Stephon Clark, from happening again. And I just thought that was a lot of compassion from an owner, when these owners don't have to be compassionate because they're the owners. They have the money, right? I mean, they could easily say, everybody shut up, players play, fans watch, and we don't care about what's going on.
Leave your politics to the door, basically.
Leave your politics outside. I thought that that was a great move by the owner, and it was different than what we've seen. You know, it's interesting because, you know, in the NFL, the first owner who really came out in support of the players was Saeed Khan, who owns the Jacksonville Jaguars. And he is of Middle Eastern descent. I think he may be, I don't want to guess at you know, his country of origin, but or his nationality, but you know, he was one of the first to come out and say something, and it kind of in player in support of his players. And we see the owner of the Sacramento Kings, you know, I'm not sure of his nationality, but he's not white, right? Mm-hmm. And not that we care, but there's a trend there. You know, our white owners aren't saying anything, but the brown ones are.
And this is Asian, you know? This guy's Asian, I believe.
I think, I mean, Indian or Pakistani.
Which is Asian, okay.
All right, you and your...
Anyway.
So unbecoming. But anyway, that was different. And I thought that that was a good move. Now, will it be embraced by conservative media? No, they'll come out, because the conservative media, anything that deals with social justice, the conservative media says, well, that's liberal politics and we can't get behind it. Why? Conservative media is okay with, you know, citizens being shot by the government? I don't know. Because just based off of conservative politics, you would think that they would say, hey, that's too much government and that doesn't make sense. And hey, right, Second Amendment, right to bear arms, which they kind of make that argument, except for in these particular situations. But I thought it was a show of compassion, which I think is a breath of fresh air from the sports aspect of this.
And especially the NBA had pretty much said, after all the stuff that got said about the NFL, the NBA had pretty much said, okay, we don't want this getting into our game, so please, you know, leave it at the door. And they've never infringed on you know, LeBron and Kevin Durant and these other guys who've been pretty aggressive on Twitter and saying some things, but they've said, on game day, leave that shit out. And now an owner steps up and says...
Well, that's actually... So the NBA a long time ago said you have to stand for the national anthem. That is why... That's what got...
It was... It wasn't... the guard from LSU, Chris Jackson?
Yeah, who he converted.
Abdul Roof? Or am I mixing up?
No, you did butcher his name, but.
All right.
Mahmoud Abdul Raif.
Okay.
He ended up converting to Islam, and then he, you know, wouldn't stand, and then I ended up getting him banned from the league. I mean, he wasn't officially banned, but...
He was blackballed.
Right, he was blackballed out of the league, and it was a league policy that you stand for the national anthem. It's been that way. They haven't changed it. My argument for the NFL all along has been they should have taken that as soon as they came out for the national anthem and made it a league-wide thing back in 08 or 09, then they should have immediately said, oh, by the way, it's part of the collective bargaining agreement that every player stand. You know, and have a little foresight. You have a lot of people who make a lot of money on your legal team in the NFL to see that it could be a problem. And you had an issue in the NBA as a reference point, and you could have avoided everything that happened. Now, they didn't, and it cost them, you know, maybe not a ton. It cost them money. It cost them viewership. It cost them support. Not a ton, but they could have avoided that. Now, a lot of people are going to say, oh, but the protests were so important, and we had to have them, and Colin Kaepernick is the man of the year. Okay, fine. But I'm just thinking of this from the angle of the NFL and from a business perspective, right? Because that to me, I think that there were some other things involved with these protests that went awry that caused some problems for the messaging. And you'll have that in a protest right. where you can't control everyone. But I just think there were other tentacles to it.
Without rehashing it. Here's that we can go down that road for hours.
And one other thing about the killing with Stephon Clark. So DeMarcus Cousins, he's a center in the NBA, you know, well known. He's temperamental, but he is a rebounding machine. He can score. You know, he's just a big athletic guy. Who no longer plays in Sacramento. He actually is down in New Orleans. He recently got injured, but he offered to pay and is paying for the funeral of Stephon Clark. And this is not the first time that this has happened. There were two high school football players in Sacramento who were shot and killed, and he paid for their funeral as well. And he's also known for contributing money to local high schools, local charities and nonprofit organizations that help troubled youth, and is known to be very compassionate in the community. He's got issues in the locker room. He's temperamental. And I think part of it is that he's empathetic and he's emotional. I think he sees problems and he wants to help them. And I think his emotions get the better of him in sports on the court or in the locker room. But I think the flip side of that is when he sees a problem in society, in the real world, he's empathetic. He gets emotionally attached and involved. And when people say, well, what are these guys doing besides protesting or complaining to the media? You have an example. This is what they're doing. You know, they're taking the burden off of this family. You know, how much money has he donated to help kids, and whether it's getting them into college or keep them off the streets and things like that? And that matters. You know, LeBron James has put 1,100 kids through school, and they didn't have to pay a dime. He basically went on his dime, whether through his charity or money that he donated. That matters. That's 1,100 lives that have been impacted in a positive way by a black athlete who has an issue with some of the things that are going on in his community or communities like his, and that's the impact that some of these guys have. And that's the important flip side of some of the protests that we see. And there's guys in the NFL who do the exact same thing. Some of those guys took a knee. And when people say, well, what are you doing to make it better? And I said that to Colin Kaepernick, because when he first took the stand, he hadn't done anything. And, you know, we called him out, and then not necessarily in response to us, right. but he said, listen, I'm going to give $1 million
right.
to various charities, and I'm going to get involved, and I'm going to go see how people live and how they live their lives. And that's what he did, and he had an impact. And that's the important. If you're going to make noise about it, then come with solutions and come with something to actually make it better and advance the situation. And that's what these guys are doing. So our hats off to Boobie Cousins. You know, hope he gets back and has a solid season and maybe ends up with the Cavs.
And that wouldn't be so bad. We should all talk about how LeBron James has been playing ridiculously lately, but let's not go to that now.
Okay.
Because holy shit, he's been
unbelievable. I can sum it up. He real good at basketball.
He is real good at basketball. all right, so we were talking about being on Facebook Live. I wrote an article on our website, whiskeycongress.com, ding, about Facebook's responsibility in the whole, Trump election thing. And I'm a huge fan of Facebook. I love Facebook. I'm on it almost every day. I like Mark Zuckerberg. I like him as a businessman.
I'm the complete opposite. I hate Facebook.
I know you
I
do.
Hate it.
I
don't have a problem with Mark Zuckerberg. I love it. I hated the movie. I love the movie.
I read the book. I love the book.
Yeah, I just, I literally only have it to make sure my family knows that I'm alive and that my daughter's still cute.
Well, your daughter is still cute, and you use Facebook every bit as much as I do.
Yeah,
I do. You can hate it and use it. Fine.
I hate it and I do it begrudgingly.
Okay.
I grit my teeth when I do it.
I hate this. Damn you, Mark Zuckerberg, for making this amazing thing that I can talk to my entire family the whole time. The fact that I can stay in touch with my college buddies. That's what I do. I'm in touch with friends from college who I've not spoken to in years. I mean, I know a couple weeks ago I talked about my...
Pick up the phone, Jim.
You know what? I should.
Pick up the phone.
Oh, stop it. Don't you shame me. Don't you try to shame me. Don't even try this bullshit.
Reach out, brother.
Don't even try this bullshit on me.
Jim, touch my hand.
And I'm not touching your hand. I'm not touching your hand. Anyway... the whole thing about Facebook getting data mined and interrupting the election, I kind of want to call, it's not, I can't call complete bullshit on it because it happened and it impacts things, because what Facebook has done has made it possible for all of us to argue at the Thanksgiving dinner table anytime, all the time, with people we don't even fucking know. I don't know how many times I've gotten down the rabbit hole.
Cause that's awesome.
No, you know what? It's awful.
It's only ripping apart the fabric of our society. But no, please, tell me more. Other than that, though, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
I love that expression. It is what we make of it, right?
Sure.
You can blame the platform for what we use it for. I blame us for letting it go down there. And I have actually, for the last almost a year, said enough. I barely ever get into political debates on Facebook anymore because I realize how absolutely fucking futile they are.
Well, I told you to stop doing that a long time ago.
Well, you told me. I didn't listen necessarily.
I know. But, and that was even, that wasn't even show related. You're just going to have a stroke.
That's going to happen sooner or later. Anyway, let's just accept that. And well, thank you.
I'm just trying to delay it.
Delay until we make it big and you can find a good replacement co-host.
No, God, no. You know, I stopped kind of getting into the political debates on my own personal page because it wasn't healthy. I was getting upset. I was getting angry. I was like, you know, my opinion of people was changing in a negative way over some arbitrary things. Yeah, the things mattered from a sociopolitical standpoint, but I think there are better ways to deal with that. And when there's distance between two people and you're talking about that sort of thing, you're not going to convince anybody. You're not going to sway anyone's opinion. I think that you and I having a conversation one-on-one over a couple beers or whiskeys or both, in person, at a bar, at your place, at my place, you know, standing outside with a cigar, whatever, I can pull you to my side, or you can convince me on to come to your side.
The truth is, and we're capable of analytical self, and that's a problem.
And other people are as well.
Some are.
But they're less willing to do it on a platform like social media because of the distance, because of a lot of people are emboldened by the fact that they now have this freedom and this strength that they didn't have before. You know, the thing that I always say is that the great thing about Facebook is that everybody has a voice. The thing that sucks about Facebook is that everybody has a voice, right? And there's some people who, this sounds shitty, who just shouldn't have a fucking voice. Right, there's some people who don't have
more ears and fewer mouths.
Right, that don't have the intellectual capacity to really process what they're saying, to really to think something out, and give us and really contribute to the conversation, contribute to the citizenry. And so, and some people say, well, any contribution is a good contribution, and I disagree with that. There are some people that, for lack of a better word, that just don't have all the lights on, right? And so when those people start to argue with you, you really need to be careful, because if you argue with them too long, right, and they're not making any sense, then who's the fool, right? And you can't tell who the fool is.
Wrestle with a pig long enough, and then you realize the pig likes it.
Right. Okay.
that's an expression I used to hear that, you know.
All right. Well, I
don't want to use that one again. Well, fine.
Yeah, we won't.
It's the same concept.
We'll talk about that after.
Same concept.
But the point is, so I just stopped getting into some of the political stuff. Now, every now and again, I'll get sucked in, and I'll go a few jabs back and forth with someone, and I realize, like, what are you doing? you know, like you said you weren't going to do this, right? And I stop, right? It's just like, stop, eat cold turkey. All right, I'm done. I made that mistake. I did it. I shouldn't have done it. And I pull back, and I'm usually good for a few months. But someone says something so ridiculous, so they put up a meme, right? And memes, actually, you know what's really hurt social media is memes. Memes. There are pictures with words that anyone can make. I can make a meme right now and put it out there that says anything with any picture. And there are people out there who will take that, post it, and fight it and defend it as if it is the gospel, right? Delivered to them by God himself in the burning bush. Right. If I put something out there, whether it's, especially from a political standpoint, whether it's liberal or conservative, and knowing what pushes their buttons, and I say something that the conservatives like, and I put a picture out there that makes sense, and I put the words that they want to hear, there are people who will take that and then circulate it like wildfire and then defend it at all costs. And the same thing with the progressives and the liberals. They'll do the exact same thing. Right. And that pervasive behavior on social media is one of the biggest issues that has hurt us over the last, really over the last 3 years. Right. We've just seen sort of a regression in fucking common sense because of this. And again,
I walked away from one of those just yesterday. I saw it. I saw the crowd that was enjoying it. And I said, you know what? I would love to jump in there and say how stupid this is. And then I realized. It was literally, it was Clinton gave North Korea nukes, Obama gave Iran nukes, Trump gave us a tax cut, who's your favorite guy? And I'm like, wow, if that makes sense to you, I don't know what to say. And it was shared, it was from some stupid thing.
And I think the bigger thing is that, you know, talking about this whole Russia and collusion and everything else, what we know now is Russia took advantage of this situation. They looked at Facebook, they looked at people, how people respond to it, and they said, all right, listen, if we throw words on pictures and we send them out to everybody, black, white, or other, conservative, liberal, progressive, independent, Tea Party, Green Party, whatever, and knowing what they really will get behind, we can get these people to eat themselves, right? To cannibalize themselves.
Just utter chaos. You don't need to.
And that's exactly what they did. Now, did it sway the election? It probably had an impact, right? Sure. I mean, because you know, Facebook and all the numbers are saying that, oh well, it was only 25,000 people, and it's just like, all right, well. Listen, you got 25,000 people with an average of 500 friends or more on Facebook.
Well, no, I heard it was 50 million people that they hacked.
I've heard different numbers. I don't know what the numbers are.
Either way, and shame on us. I'm going to say you. Shame on everyone. If what you read on Facebook, that in and of itself changed your political
compass. If it did,
shame on you for letting that happen.
The issue is it disrupted the discourse. I don't know what impact it had at the voter booth, if it had one, but what I do know is that it completely disrupted the discourse, and I don't think it was in a good way, right? It's hard for me to think that was positive. What's going on right now is positive. So much anger, so much vitriol on either side. You know, I mean, there are some things that the liberals are doing that they're putting out on Twitter and Facebook that are utterly disgusting. That are discussing and should be unacceptable. Some of the things that they're saying about Donald Trump and the President of the United States and the office that he sits in and that he holds, to me, are appalling and shouldn't be accepted. But because it's Donald Trump and because he came in and the way that he did, right, which was so vastly different than any other president, then we're just accepting it as, oh, it's okay that they say it because we don't like him. Right. But what does that matter whether we like him or not? Why can't we just respect the office and not wish that he were killed or taken out or assassinated? Or if I see him, I'm going to punch him in the face or I'll shoot him in the face or whatever it might be. Like, that's ridiculous, because I was appalled when the conservatives did it with Obama. Right. I mean, right. Ted Nugent right. threatened to kill him. I mean, I put up something on Twitter. It was like 9 different screen grabs of conservatives threatening the lives of Obama,
his kids,
his wife, his family, or anyone who supported him, right? I mean, like, there were 9 different screen grabs from Twitter or Facebook of people who just said, just awful things about our president, Barack Obama. And a lot of it was rooted in race, and some of it was just anger and hate. And it wasn't good for Obama. I don't think it's good, or it shouldn't be acceptable for Trump.
I agree. Now, I will say that the attacks on him, on Trump, meaning based on behaviors that he criticized Obama for, or in this case, in the case of all the sex stuff, stuff that Bill Clinton got attacked for a consensual relationship in the Oval Office. Trump is getting, dragged through the mud over all these affairs. And I said this about Clinton, and I'll say it about Trump. I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
I give zero fucks about their sex lives. Right. None. And
you can fuck a tranny, and as long as you do your job well, I don't care. Sorry. I mean, if that offends your senses, then it offends your senses, but it doesn't change the productivity. You know, I mean, it's just like you may not like what someone does outside of the particular area in which they do things.
Or in the case of Bill Clinton, in the office he did things, and I still don't care. Get blown in the Oval Office and then do a good job. Good for you.
Or do it simultaneously all together. I'm signing a treaty and I'm blowing a load.
that was one of my bits in stand-up was, that's the most awful thing you can do in the Oval Office. I'm like, I think it's the most awesome thing you can do in the Oval Office. Do good things for America while getting a beach. Doesn't get much better than that.
Beach. That just makes it sound like it smells. I don't know if I buy that.
Well, all right. So we're almost at an hour, and I do want to talk about a whole bunch of things, but I want to quickly talk about something I saw on Bill Maher last night.
Okay.
Because I'm watching Bill Maher's show. I know you are an occasional watcher and not a fan.
So I watched the show last night.
Okay.
And I'm not a fan of Bill Maher because he's a pompous ass.
Fair.
He went to Cornell. It's an Ivy League school. I mean, he went to Cornell in 1978 or whenever he graduated. So you're old, Bill. But I mean, he's just, to me, he's just kind of a jack off. I don't like the way he presents. I think that he thinks he's smarter than he is because, again, he went to Cornell. And he, I'm sure if you meet him, he'll tell you. And he doesn't present well to me. I don't understand why he has a show. He's not funny. It's obvious that they have a laugh track on that show. Like, I feel like the crowd is just sitting there like, what the fuck are we doing here? Why did we come here? Anyway,
I disagree on some of those things. I do agree he's a pompous ass. There's no denying that. I think he's funny. But anyway, so I'm watching a show last night, and this one woman, was it Mara Cohn, I want to say was her name. And so I didn't know who she was when she was introduced. I've done some research.
She's a conservative pundit.
Yeah, now I've done some research, and I'm not so surprised. But something had said about conspiracy theories. She's like, said something to the effect of, you don't believe in that conspiracy theory that the CIA started the crack epidemic, do you? And Bill Maher was like, well, no, of course not. And I'm thinking to myself, that's really not a conspiracy theory. That's pretty much a proven fact at this point. I mean, all right, to say they started the crack epidemic is probably poor choice of language.
Well, my question is this. Is it actually a proven fact? What are you basing that off of?
I know you're going to say yes.
What are you basing it off
of? I'm basing it off of, among other things, John Kerry's testimony in front of Congress. I mean, right, it's been challenged, and there have been serious political figures who have said in front of sworn testimony that, yes, the CIA used cocaine sales to fund paramilitary activities in the Contras in the 80s. I think that's, verified fact might be too strong.
So if you go back and you look at what was actually said, and you go back and you look at the DOJ's reports, and now, listen, if you go back and you look at what's documented, it's not quite as cut and dry as the CIA went to known drug lords who were distributing crack in L.A., and this, I'm not saying that this is what happened.
All right.
It's not as cut and dry as CIA went to drug dealers from Nicaragua and said, yes, we know that you're dealing cocaine in South Central LA. And so we want you to, sell as much drugs as you can, and then, take those profits and then fund this war elsewhere.
Agreed. It was not that
wasn't that open.
Right.
All
right.
The biggest, but, get to is the CIA ignored a lot, right? They ignored a lot. They worked with a lot of nefarious, shady people. They were focused on one goal. They didn't focus on what was happening right here at home. Now, some people say that was by design because they wanted, and some people say this, that the CIA didn't care and that the U.S. government wanted what was going on with crack, South Central, Miami, Chicago, New York, American Gangster, right. Frank Lucas.
It went everywhere. It was
everywhere. Yeah. And so there are people who will say that's what the government wanted because look at what it did. It completely disenfranchised the black community. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted Jim Crow back, and this is how they got it. Right. There are some people who will say that.
I'm not saying that.
Well, there's some people who are. Well,
fair. People say it. I agree.
Right. I mean, like, if you read the book, The New Jim Crow, like that connection is made. And I think it's a hard connection to make. And I think what happened is you had some ineptitude and you had some greed and you had a desire for a goal, and they were focused on something else somewhere else, and they completely ignored what was happening here or the people that they were interacting with. They ignored what they were doing. They didn't care what they were doing on the side as long as they got their war somewhere else.
So let me say some things and give me fact, fiction, or other.
Other.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, it's all gonna be.
No, it's not. So the CIA orchestrated delivery of cocaine into America.
Other.
Really? Not okay. All right, then I'll stop it there. They didn't orchestrate or they didn't facilitate?
Other. I don't know if you have proof of that. Okay. If you can
Well, I can't.
After this
if
show,
I could, I'd be dead. That's we got proof of that.
Right, and that's kind of the problem, right? If you can show me where someone said we paid these people to bring drugs into the United States because X, Y, and Z, or we wanted, or we made sure that these people we made sure that these people brought drugs into the United States so that they could sell it, so that they could make money, so that they could have funds to buy and sell weapons to the people we needed to buy and sell weapons to. If you could show me where someone says that explicitly or implied, then I'll say, I'll buy it.
Implied, I can give you.
Are you sure?
I mean, yeah, I've seen like town halls where
this is what I want you to do.
All right.
This is Steve giving my homework.
Okay.
Right? You were a PhD candidate. I was not.
I was once.
But I'm going to give you homework. I want you, I'm dead serious.
All right.
By our next show, I want you to give me proof that there was an implied effort by the CIA. Implied. I'm not saying you have to say we did this explicitly.
Again, if I do this that well, I will be dead. You know that.
Okay. Well, it's just half-assed just because we know how good you are.
part dickish, part funny. I respect both those things.
If you can find something that anyone can read that won't get you killed,
the truth is out there.
Yeah.
No, I will. Alex. So you want me to provide you with?
I want you to support what you're saying.
They're turning the frogs gay, Steve. And they're making him bring cocaine into Los Angeles with AK-47s.
How do you like that picture?
That was awesome. What the fuck? That caught me totally off guard.
I know it did.
So Steve sends me this picture with Alex Jones with the fucking carrots in his teeth. Is it carrots?
Yeah, they were carrots.
And he was...
I didn't know what it was.
I literally had no idea how to respond to that.
It popped up on Twitter, and I immediately was like, well, I'm going to send this to Jim and fuck his day up.
Well, you succeeded. All right, we should wrap this up.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up, but I want you to...
That's my assignment. I will find...
Your mission...
is to find evidence to prove the conspiracy theory that the CIA did, in fact, use a drug sales ring to fund their activities in the Contras. Right. I will provide evidence of that, and I will do it on our
What I will say, some of the parameters are:
can it be a movie starring Jeremy Renner? No, damn it!
It cannot be a goddamn movie.
It stars Jeremy Renner. He's Hawkeye.
I love
Hawkeye.
I love me some Jeremy Renner. right? Jeremy Renner in The Town was great, right? He's fucking dying at the end, and then he's fucking trying to eat a cheeseburger out of the trash, you know, before he bleeds out. But listen, no, it can't be a movie, and you can't use newspaper articles from 1986, 97, or later.
Why can't I use newspaper articles?
Because those aren't backed up by actual fact.
I'll tell you what. I will put my case together. I'll put my case
together. Put your case together.
And then you can judge my case.
All right.
Maybe we do a special episode in the middle of the week when I'm down in North Carolina. All right. So the super fight is possibly going to get interrupted because
are you talking about Canelo
and Triple G?
Yeah.
No, an even bigger super fight.
What?
Trump versus Biden. Dun, dun, dun. How fucking ridiculous is this bullshit?
Jim.
fucking former vice president said, if I saw Donald Trump after he said this, I'd take him behind the school and kick his ass. Right. And then, of course, Tiny Ham Trump comes back and says, I'd box him with my tiny
hands. He'd go down hard, and he wouldn't know what was coming.
Two hits, hitting you, and you hitting the floor.
Somebody pointed out, and I can't remember who it was. It was my
this
buddy.
This is so ridiculous.
One of the guys I played ball with in college, he pointed out that between Biden and Trump, there are 9 deferments from Vietnam, one because of asthma, and the other one because of bone spurs. All right, and this is Tommy Toughnuts 1 and Tommy Toughnuts 2.
I'm not going left or right here. It is right. Embarrassing that our former vice president and our sitting president are talking like
it's awful.
14-year-old tough guys.
It's awful. I mean, if I could somehow, I would ground them both. Like you're just both fucking grounded. Like what are you? Like Joe Biden? What? Listen, man. Like, we just got through a phase of memes with you that were phenomenal.
They were hilarious.
Because
you say stupid shit.
Right,
because
you say...
I love Joe Biden.
You say dumb shit and you
Joe
make
Biden
dumb
because
faces.
He says stupid shit.
Right, he says dumb shit and he makes dumb faces. And we had, there was about a 3-month span where there were just Joe Biden memes that brought me to tears because they were so funny. Right, and now he's going to go beat somebody up. He's going to go beat up the president, right, behind the bleachers. Come on, Joseph. And then Donald Trump, he'll go down hard and fast. He won't even know it hit him.
The lightning strike of Donald Trump and his...
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that is a shame on everyone.
And
thing.
The worst part about it is I feel that after Donald Trump's presidency, right, like he's no longer the president. Joe Biden ends up not running or running and losing.
Yeah, and by the way, Joe, had you run, never mind.
I just feel like I don't think Joe Biden would have been able to win. But
I disagree.
You know what? Maybe because people just hated Hillary so much.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Joe Biden would have represented.
God,
the
I know. I mean, I held my nose and voted for Hillary. I couldn't stand her.
You held your nose, voted for Hillary, and with the other hand, you punched me if I didn't vote for Hillary.
Yeah, that's how fucked up it was.
I know.
And while
because I was Gary Johnson guy, until
mind you, I was voting for Hillary, punching you if you didn't, and telling you that Trump was going to win.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's kind of a unicorn moment.
That's why I probably need to see a therapist. That
or drink more Powers whiskey, which is what we're doing anyway.
A whole slew of other things.
We got through the one shot.
I hope no one is paying attention to the amount of whiskey we consume. Yeah. The show.
See, that's the problem with this live shit. People can actually see what we're doing. The
live video, big all mouth, that. There's proof.
There's no proof. I mean, we need to hire Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Steve and Jim did not drink Mickey's Big Mouth. Those bottles in front of them during they got lower in volume.
I just, you know why we couldn't? Because I would just be like, she's fucking lying.
Yeah, there's that.
We did drink it.
We did.
She's a terrible liar.
She is.
I can't take it. I don't want her associated with my brand. Screw her.
Agreed.
But I mean, not in her current capacity. That would be in.
Don't be gross. In, I guess this is going bad.
No,
okay.
No. That would be in her capacity as our press secretary.
Okay.
I would hold her to a higher standard where I just want her to be honest. That does not happen in the White House. So
fair. All right, let's wrap this up. But before we do, we need to talk about. So Trump signs the spending bill after threatening to veto it, which is the ultimate backtrack, whatever. And I'm not even going to try to play a political game, but boy, the right turned on him hard.
I don't agree that they turned on him hard and called her.
They reacted hard.
They are reacting.
They
but
tweeted hard.
There was a very strong Twitter reaction to Trump signing that bill. You know, there are some levels of betrayal because you're not getting a wall. You're not getting Border Patrol agents. You're not getting a lot of the reforms that you said that you were going to get. But I think cooler heads will prevail. I think one, you'll have another scandal or transition or something that'll happen in the next three days that will easily...
Which is an eternity in our current political...
It is. I mean, but something will happen that will split everybody right down the middle again. We'll forget about it. I mean, like, you know, Trump already tried, right?
He already tried to bring back the transgender thing.
Well, I mean, and like, no one even...
I think he wanted that to be the, oh, wait, I'm back on your side.
Right, and,
like,
and no...
Yeah, sorry, not good enough, Donnie.
Yeah, but I mean, like, think about this. I mean, he tried to stir up the whole thing about DACA. Nobody bit, right? He was just like, hey, the Democrats won't do anything about DACA. And, like, no one really... Like, no one said anything. Like, no one gives a shit, right? Democrats are just like, yeah, nah, we're just not going to touch it. Conservatives are just like, okay, we're over it. And they're just like, all right, come on, Don, move on. I think in a couple days, something will pop up that will grab everybody's attention, that the Democrats will dig in, the Republicans will dig in, progressive conservatives will dig in, Breitbart will bring up the fact that this whole spending bill thing happened, but they ultimately will support Trump because who else are they going to support? Right. I mean, they've anyone who's criticized Trump, and that's almost everyone. And if they haven't criticized Trump, they're probably in the administration right now. And so they're not going to be running for president. So anyone who like whether it's Breitbart or it's Fox or the rest of these conservative pundit pinheads, you know, a la Bill O'Reilly, they have made their bed and now they have to lay in it. Right. They made their bed and they have to lay in it with Trump. And that's who they're going to support. Right, there's no one else that's going to come out that's going to be any crazier than Donald Trump that's going to allow them to say, screw you, Donald Trump, this is going to be our champion. That person's not out there, right? It's not going to be Ted Cruz. Obviously, Marco Rubio doesn't have the balls to do it. I don't see anyone else out there unless there's just some psychopath mayor somewhere in some city in you know, some city in Alabama, right? Who you know, I don't know. Maybe Roy Moore says, you know what? You couldn't get me in the Senate. I'm running for president. And maybe that's the guy that they get behind.
I'm not expecting anyone to challenge Trump for the throne.
Okay,
so, actually, other than Jeff Flake. I think Jeff Flake might do it.
Yeah, but they won't get behind him.
Who won't?
Your
Republican establishment?
The Republican... I'm not sure I agree. I'm saying your conservative media, Fox, Breitbart, they're not going to get behind a Jeff Flake. And the people who support Trump in terms of, you know, all those people who watch Breitbart and Fox News and rely on that as their Bible of information, they're not going to get behind a Jeff Flake. Ultimately, they will come back to Donald Trump. I promise you.
You're probably right, but I'm not.
Man, just accept that shit. It's okay, Jim. It's okay for a black guy to be right. Just accept it. It is.
I'm sorry, but you're black.
What it is.
You're black. I can't accept it as right.
Well, you're Mexican. I can't accept that as being right. And that being said, I'm about to call ICE on you and get your brown ass deported, sir.
Back to Poland. All right. Should we shut this down before we get really stupid?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's probably a good idea. All right. Anyway, Whiskey Congress. We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. We are whiskeycongress.com. We are now affiliated.
Hey, by the way, check us out with Political Storm. I jumped the gun on that.
Yep.
We got stories on there. This will be on there. The video. Hopefully some of the video comes out. I have no idea how that shit's going to work, but we'll figure it out.
We have now powered our way through the six pack of Mickey's Big Mouth, bought by you as a joke, and I accept that it was funny, but now we're through this shit. I'll have some homebrew ready available soon. We are Whiskey Congress. We are out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.